Hey everyone, this is Chris, also known as the lead or head expeditioner here at Expedition Buster. Welcome and thank you for listening to the Expedition Buster podcast. All right, so no music, nothing this time, and you might hear me bumping the microphone because I haven't done this in a while and I'm sitting here trying to get reacquainted with podcasting. But it's been over a year since the last episode and there's obviously been a lot that's going on, and if nobody is still subscribed or listening, I 100% understand. I don't know how frequently I'm going to do this, probably as frequently as I feel the need to. It's really that kind of deep dive into what's going on in my life, my concerns, my observations of the world. But I would like to hear other people's stories about how they've faced adversity or how they've gotten through struggles in life and things like that. And so, hey, the email address feedback@expeditionbuster.com is there for you if you're interested in setting something up. So with that, let's get going. All right. I don't know why I just went into radio announcer voice. This happens. So it's been over a year since I've done something like this. In terms of this context, I've still worked on a podcast with my friends, and that's a lot of fun. And I really enjoy getting to do it. We haven't done one in a little while, I think 2 or 3 months. It hasn't been that long, but we've got some stuff cooking. We've got some ideas and some other things going on. But really, what have I been up to? So if we go back to last October 2022, what was going on? Well, first of all, I was getting ready to investigate some new things about myself. And I can't remember if at that time I was dating my ex or not. We basically dated a couple of times and it, you know, there was no animosity. There's still no animosity. But we over the course of time, figured out that, yeah, even as much as we've changed as people, the meshing of us together in a live-in permanent situation was never going to work out. So there was some pain associated with that, but also it's just a lot of ups and downs of life, the universe, and everything. But later on, I believe it was in November, I began to investigate something about myself, and that was whether or not I have ADHD or attention deficit hyperactive disorder. And this is something that wouldn't surprise people if I did. It definitely wouldn't surprise me. And it would answer a lot of questions about my life. It's not to say that, you know, it's an excuse for bad behavior. It's not to say it's an excuse for my own failures in life. It is to say, though, that if your brain fundamentally functions a little bit differently, that it's harder to make certain choices. And there's actually a little bit of a social learning deficit because of it, because you don't remember life's lessons as well. You don't remember the weight of those lessons as well. And there are a lot of other scientific things behind it. For example, I'm somebody that could handle caffeine like nobody's business from a young age, for the most part. And even now, it wouldn't take me very long to get back into the habit of drinking an entire G Fuel energy drink in the afternoon. And that has, I think, like 200 milligrams of caffeine in it. So that's also something that can be tied to ADHD, in that people that have ADHD brains tend to process caffeine differently. It tends not to make them as hyper and jittery and all those other things. It doesn't mean that caffeine has not kept me awake at night at times. It has. But just like observing different things like this, you know, knowing the right thing to do, knowing that I have to get something done and not being able to do it, even though I know how to, I know why it's so important, and I can't force myself to do it. And I'm not saying right now, personally, like directly, I'm saying that is something that is a symptom of ADHD. So last year, in November, I believe, I began going down the pathway of trying to determine whether or not I have ADHD. And I haven't fully found out yet, but the psychiatrist that I worked with, or rather the APRN, the psych APRN that I've been working with, believe that I do. and I recently went through psychological testing. And, you know, to those out there that judge people for ADHD and say, oh, well, you know, you're just trying to get medication, I'll tell you that the medication does help, but it's not a magical silver bullet. And it also depends on the variety of brain chemistry and neural pathways that you have. So there are some times where I find, you know, the medicine that I'm currently on helps. And then there are other times where my brain is just as disorganized and unfocused as it always was in the past. So it's hit or miss, and a lot of it, you have to, how can I say it? You have to leverage a lot more mental energy to really fight yourself. And there's only so much of that you can do. You can't be hyper aware all the time of, oh, that's a distracting thought, I'll ignore it. Oh, I don't need to watch that video right now. Oh, I don't need to do this thing at work, I need to do this. Like, basically, the way that my brain personally works is, at least as far as I understand it and my personal experience, aside from a formal ADHD diagnosis, which is pending, is there are two kind of types, or like kind of weighted versions of ADHD. There's an impulsive, and there's another one, and I can't remember what the other one is. And you can have both. For me, I find that I am very impulsive. The minute like an idea pops up in my head, I'm like, oh, I've got to go look at that thing now. I've got to go do that now. And also, though, I have what's called demand avoidance. And that's part of ADHD as well, which is, hey, I know I need to do something. And even if I really want to do it, I can't make myself do it. That's what's known as demand avoidance. And that's probably part of what caused me a lot of problems in school. In that, for me, I love learning. I really do. I love watching in-depth documentaries about things. I love my brain randomly like finding this one topic to fixate on and fixating on it. I love watching behind the scenes on movies, all this stuff. I love learning. But the minute that I tell myself or somebody else tells me that I have to learn something, oh, well, then my brain immediately loses interest and turns off. And in fact, my brain actively fights me, which is, you know, kind of a big issue, in that it's like, oh, well, you know, so whenever I'm told I need to do something, it makes it harder for me to do it. And I know that sounds weird, but it's like, it's one of those things that I've lived with my entire life, and not necessarily maliciously. Now, don't get me wrong. There are plenty of times when I was a young adult, when I was a teenager, when I was in my marriage, where I was just lazy. And I can admit that. There's a difference between lazy and executive brain function issues. But that said, the executive brain dysfunction issues can play into laziness, and sometimes can play into even a maliciousness to the laziness. So, for example, like your parents tell you, do the dishes. Well, I could do them later. I could do them later. And they might constantly remind you, sorry, oh, the dishes are building up. The dishes are building up. Like, get the dishes done. How hard is it? And what that immediately does is, first of all, as a teenager being told to do the dishes over and over again, you're already annoyed. You're like, I don't want to do the dishes. They're making me do it. I don't want to have to do this, blah, blah, blah. All right, that's normal. But for somebody who has ADHD, so one, you're being told to do the dishes, which no teenager wants to do anyway. And two, the minute it becomes a higher demand task, are like, oh, not intentionally at this point. Like, part of your initial not doing it is intentional because you're annoyed with your parents. But the other piece of it is, the more your parents harp on it, your brain then immediately is like, oh, I'm being demanded of. Now I don't want to do it even more. And so you have like an intentional malicious, like, I'll do the dishes when I feel like it. But then it's reinforced by the, my brain also doesn't want me to do it even more because it's a demand. So that is something that in various forms I've lived with for my entire life. And I've always kind of felt like, for example, teachers and bosses and everybody else always meaning well are like, you know, you're so bright if you could only just do the work. Or, hey, you've got really great ideas if only you can execute. And what that does over time, when you've heard that a good chunk of your life, is it kind of erodes your belief that you can get anything done. And that's in addition to the condition of your brain, which isn't, I think it's a bad idea to call it a disorder or a condition, to be perfectly honest. It's a brain that functions differently than the societal norm. Society expects us to, for better or for worse, still kind of be in that mentality of you punch the clock, you focus for 8 hours, you punch the clock, you leave. And first of all, realistically, that's not how people work. There are people taking breaks all the time. There are people finding ways to distract themselves, all that type of stuff. But let's say even if it was possible, it doesn't mean that every person can do it. Now, I'm not saying that I'm going to give up my full-time job given that information, but I'm saying it explains a lot. It explains a lot why, with certain struggles that I've had throughout my academic career and my actual work career. And it's even harder when people can see potential in you and you can see that potential in yourself, but you can't seem to deliver on that potential because you're not delivering on it the way that people expect or want. And that's really hard because society does have an expectation of this is what good performance is. This is what the ideal brain functioning is, or the way that people operate in this environment, and you're not operating that way. Now, does that mean that I turn around and say, well, I have ADHD. I don't have to do things the way that everybody else does? No, that's not what I'm saying. So then people might ask, well, why even get diagnosed then? I mean, if you believe that it's not important, why get diagnosed? Why go down that path? And there are two reasons, legitimately. One is, I want to know for me. I need to understand how my brain works, not just because I understand from observation, but I also need to know, is there something going on that, hey, maybe medication could help. Maybe certain tips and tricks and tools might help. And so having a diagnosis gives you a more concrete structure to build a useful framework around to help yourself. So that's my number one thing. Number two is a little bit on the, you know, on the personal safety type of thing. My boss is amazing. All right. My current boss is amazing. And she understands that, hey, I'm going to get stuff done and I'm going to get it done and I'm going to get it done when it's due. And there have been a couple times where I've gone too far in either forgetting something critical or not taking something seriously. And she's called me out on it. But for the most part, she understands that, hey, there are going to be times when I'm hyper productive and get more done than anybody could imagine in a very short period of time. And then there will be other times where just getting the basics done will be a struggle. And that said, as long as I'm keeping up my job performance and getting what I need to get done, it's good. It's fine. And also, I work from home. Not necessarily because of COVID or because there isn't an office to go to, but because the office environment is very distracting. you want to talk to everybody. You want to get up and walk around and get extra coffee and get more water. And it's a great reason to distract yourself from doing stuff. And it isn't to say there aren't distractions at home. I mean, I could put on the TV, and sometimes I actually do that for background noise. It's like, oh, I have something to distract my brain in the background, and I can focus on the current task. And yeah, I know there are studies that are mixed on that as to whether or not it helps focus or not. In my case, sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't. It depends on the day. And that's one of the bigger struggles. So why is the second ADHD diagnosis reason important? Well, let's say I do get somebody that isn't as understanding. Let's say somebody comes in and says, you will come to the office or else. At least then I can say, well, here's the thing. I'm not just working from home because I want to work from home and not be part of a team. I'm working from home because, one, it's less distracting, and two, because I have a legitimate, like, brain functioning difference that makes me more susceptible to being distracted in an environment where more distractions are present. So it's one of those things where, hey, I'm never one that's going to be like, hey, I have an issue that prevents me from doing my job, and therefore you should let me not do any work but still pay me. Like, no, I've had to live with it this long without a diagnosis. I'm fine. It's only recently that I've really considered it and taken it into an account and started to develop some tools around it. But it is to say that, like, no, I don't want to sit there and be like, I have ADHD, I'm disabled. Like, no, that's not how I see myself. It's more of a background safety net in case I ever have to play that card, which I don't want to. Like, it's the last thing, like, my boss and I were talking about it at one point. She's like, you know, if you get diagnosed, I might have to go to HR and tell them. And I'm like, No, don't. I don't want any special accommodation at this point, you know? Now, if somebody turned around and was like, well, I don't care about anything you're saying, you're going to do what I tell you to do, well, then that's not taking any of my needs into consideration whatsoever. It's basically you bashing me over the head with what you want without necessarily there being a positive end result. And if that's the case, if somebody is just basically stamping their feet and saying, you need to do this because I say you need to do this, then it would be nice to have something to fall back on and say, well, look, here's the way my brain works. I have a diagnosis of this. If you want me to go to HR, I can. But I really can't work in the office because it will just be hyper distracting. And I have evidence behind this as well, because when I did work in the office, there were plenty of times where I would sit down, I would finish a cup of coffee, immediately get back up, go get another cup of coffee, sit back down, get back to work, have to use the bathroom, get up to use the bathroom, go get some water, chat with people in the cafeteria, then come back, sit down to get some work done, then immediately realize that I've finished my next cup of coffee, go get more coffee. It was like 5 to 15 minutes of every hour at minimum was spent getting up and finding something else to do other than what I needed to do. And that's not conducive to business, but it's also not conducive to me getting business done. And when you have other people around you as well, it's great, like, when you're trying to focus on a task and somebody asks you a question and it's a task that you didn't want to be doing in the first place. It's always great when somebody says, hey, can I borrow you for a minute? And you're done. It took you every ounce of mental energy to get onto the task that you didn't want to do in the first place. And now somebody's asking you a question. You're going to spend as much time as you can doing that. And then you're going to come back and you've lost any groove that you had and you're losing all of that productivity, at which point now you're going to go and find more distractions. So it's a lot easier for me to work from home for that reason. And I get a lot more done at home. And also, like, I legit will say, like, there have been situations where I've felt like, hey, people are always watching what you're doing at work. And it's not to say that, you know, anybody's doing anything wrong, but like when people are always watching what you're doing over your shoulder, it kind of makes it even harder to perform because everybody's always watching. So then you're like paranoid. You're like, well, who's looking at what's on my computer screen and why? And it's tough. It's tough. So a lot of this past year has been me kind of going through that and trying to take it seriously, trying not to see it as like a flag to wave. But this comes a little bit with a price as well. And not like a huge price, but it does come at a price. And that's when looking at my larger life holistically. So I am a single guy, you know, single guy, you know, middle-aged, I'm 40. And, you know, one of the biggest fears of somebody my age in the situation I'm in is, well, you know, getting into dating and then judging, like, first of all, judging yourself, like, well, do I really need to find somebody? Is that something that I absolutely need or not? Should I first, and this is something actually that I have decided, like, I need to make sure that I'm happy first. And so, like, right now, there are things, like, in my living circumstances that I'm not happy with. It's not the apartment itself, but, like, hey, I'm saving up for, you know, eventually getting some couches. Because guess what? When you're dating the person that you used to be married to and you think there's a chance of getting back together, there's a good reason for you not to invest in a ton of furniture and stuff because, well, if you move back in with the person that and they already have furniture, you're not going to bring that with you. And yeah, that's a case regardless if you start dating somebody. I get that. But that was part of the reason. And part of the reason was just priorities. Like, what do I need to get and what do I want to get? And in some cases, I was getting things and still do occasionally get things that I don't need that are a shiny thing. And some of those purchases I regret. Some of them I don't. For example, I got my Ghostbusters Proton Pack this year. Do I regret spending the $550 on the Proton Pack and the wand for a second? No. Do I regret spending money on the Alice Pack frame for it? Not at all. Do I regret spending any money on any of the enhancements that I've made to it so far and any of the future enhancements that I'm going to make to it? Not at all. Is it practical? No. Is it something I absolutely love? Yes. So don't get me wrong. I'm not putting all the blame on, hey, I was dating my ex, so I didn't want to buy furniture. Like, no, like some of it is legit. Just priorities were different. But it's also about like having an environment where I am happy. And so I have done some things like I've gone to movies by myself. I've gone to restaurants and I need to get back into that. But then like there's money concerns as well, inflation and all of that stuff. And I kind of got off path here. So let me get back to my first thing before I get back to inflation and money and all of that. But the thing that ADHD and my own self-image comes into difficulty is how I see myself is flawed. And you might go, well, okay, yeah, that's probably true forever. Yeah, but it's detrimental when you see yourself in a certain way. And it's very hard to work through it. So I was posting online bemoaning like, oh, well, the dating world sucks. And, you know, I don't know how I'm going to find anybody. And I'm 40 years old and I'm divorced and I used to be religious and I might have ADHD. And somebody online said to me at one point, they were like, you know, you sound like a normie person that lives a boring life that nobody would ever be interested in based upon the way that you're portraying yourself. And I go, and they're like, well, why would your age or formal marital status or formal religious status, like, why do those things why do you see that as a detriment to yourself? And I stopped and I'm like, huh, I didn't really think about that. So when you unpack something like that, it's like, okay, well, why do I see me being divorced as something that would make me less desirable? Well, because, you know, I probably put a ton of value into that marriage at the time that I had it. You know, that was part of my identity. I put a ton of value in religion as my identity. And I see my age as a detriment because, well, you know, you're 40, you're halfway through life, you know, well, give or take. But it's like, you know, well, you're supposed to have all your family stuff sorted out or all of your marital stuff sorted out younger than that. And I know that's not technically the case. In society today, people aren't even getting married. They meet each other. They live together the rest of their lives. They're fine, you know. But all of that baggage is still ingrained inside me. And it's very hard to let go of because, you know, when in your own opinion of yourself, you saw marriage as a status. You saw religion as a status. You see your youth as a status. And then you see the way that your brain works as a, or, you know, being normal as a status. All of those things, just because you're aware that you were thinking that way, doesn't mean that it's easy to let go of. And so it took some random person on the internet to point this out. And then actually I was at my ex's house talking with her about some random stuff. And, you know, I started getting onto this same groove in the record, the same skip over and over again, the carousel of I'm feeling anxious, so I'm going to keep talking about this thing that's making me anxious. And it was about like, well, I don't know how I'm going to find somebody. Will I find somebody? You know, I don't know that I'd have the courage to walk up to somebody, all of these different things. And eventually my ex had to stop me and she basically said the same thing. She's like, you need to stop because you're creating this reality for yourself. And I'm like, oh, yeah, you're right. I probably am. But like getting past all of that is very difficult. Now, I did sign up on some dating sites and I'm kind of playing around with them a little bit, but I'm not treating it too seriously as of yet, just because realistically, I know I need to work on myself. And it still causes me anxiety because it's like, well, what if somebody does message you? Should you message them back? Should you hide your profile for the time being? You know, and it's like, I don't know what the right thing to do is. I'm 40, and I don't know what the right thing to do is. So I'm kind of in a weird limbo in that regard. And it's fine. It's fine. I also discovered that I'm pretty sure dating sites blatantly use very dirty tricks to try to get you to buy subscriptions. So just keep in mind, if you join a dating site and you immediately get like 80 likes, there's a good chance that if you just sit there for a month, though, 50 of those likes are going to disappear. Because that's what happened to me. It was very weird. It was exactly a month after I signed up for the free version of this service, and you have to pay to see the likes. So you have to pay to see the profiles of people who like you. Well, a month after I'd signed up, 50 likes randomly just disappeared one weekend. Now, either those 50 people decided they weren't interested, those 50 people all canceled at the same time, or the company had fake profiles that they used to try to hook people right away, and those fake profiles unfollowed me. I'm willing to bet that's what it was. So a lot of the past year has been reflecting on deeper stuff like this and trying to figure out how to get around it, how to get through it, how to break those trigger points. And I still, I'm not there yet. Like, I still have times where it's like, well, I need to find somebody. Well, do I? And also, like, am I really happy with myself? And why is it that I'm approaching things by saying, well, I'm divorced, I'm 40, and like not intending for it to sound negative, but if you think about it, it kind of sounds negative. Like, even some of the stuff that I have in my dating profiles, it's like somebody to accept me for who I am is what I'm looking for, which then implies perhaps there's something wrong with you, or you're insecure about the things that you believe people are going to judge you about, because you're saying, I want somebody to accept me for who I am, which then implies that who you are is different than the norm. Or at least somebody might perceive it that way, which also could be me getting in my head about, well, how are others perceiving the profile, which again is a whole nother ball of mess. So these are difficult questions. And for anybody who tells me like, oh, well, why don't you just let go of that stuff? I'm working on it. It's not like I can snap my fingers. The other thing that's really hard is what I call the yo-yo effect, or I'm calling right now the yo-yo effect. And that is, there are times when you're working on something and you go from extreme A to extreme B. So for example, let's say with money. I don't think that it would be a surprise to anybody for me to say, yeah, I won't say that I'm a reckless spender, but I am a shiny thing type of person where if there's something in the moment that I'm like, oh my gosh, I need to have this, or I want to have this, or I want to see this, or I want to do this, I'm more likely to pull the trigger on that and to buy it without necessarily thinking about the larger financial picture. And that doesn't mean that I'm going broke or I'm late on paying bills or any of that stuff. I'm not in debt. You know, we're still good. But the point being, like, I'll try to cut back on that and I'll be like, okay, I'm not going to eat fast food this month, and I'm not going to, you know, spend more than $25 this month on fun stuff for me so I could save more money for things like a new car. And inflation's going up, so it costs more to buy food, so I'm going to buy less extravagant food. I'm going to go down to like the bare minimum and all this stuff. And then my brain gets tired of that, and it feels like, you know, I'm restricting myself to, you know, like I feel trapped. And then so the opposite happens. I start going to fast food more, and I start buying things I don't need to buy, and it goes back and forth. And the same thing's true with the ideas of dating. The same thing is true for concepts around physical intimacy. The same thing is true as I go through life. It's like, you know, I try to find a middle ground, but I can't seem to find that comfortable middle ground. So I tend to waffle between extreme A and extreme B. And in the moment, it's very hard to see, you know, your way through that. And so that's something that I've also been struggling with, because there's real concern on my part when you start thinking about the future, when you start thinking about the bigger picture. Well, I need a car and I suck at saving for things, and I would eventually like to have a condo instead of living in an apartment, and I'd have to save for that, and I'm not great at saving for things, even when I put money away automatically, you know? So it's one of those things where if I think about the future too much, I underspend and I underserve myself in some ways. But in other ways, if I'm not aware of it at all, then I overspend and I overserve myself. And it's like trying to deal with that is very, very anxiety inducing. And it's very hard to deal with. And to be fair, loneliness is as well. And yes, I heard it from a trusted friend. I've heard it in, you know, books, podcasts, etc. The best way to not be lonely is to go out and do things with yourself and for yourself. And I have started doing some of that, but like it still can be very difficult. And then that drives the instinct, well, I want to date somebody because I don't want to be lonely. Well, yeah, but if that's the reason why you're trying to date somebody, you're trying to have that person fill something that's missing in your life. And that might not make for a great relationship anyway. So all this stuff rattles around in my head, and it's very, very big. These are not simple questions. And even if you have a solid religious background to you, these are not easy questions. There might be some answers in some religions for some of these questions, but that doesn't mean it's easy. So that's what's been going on. And I started streaming on Kick in addition to Twitch. There, that's something new too. My son, who I call Kit, for online purposes, he and I have done, some streaming stuff together, and it's been a lot of fun. He's been working on a Friday Night Funkin' mod, which has, I've tried to encourage him in and, given him some ideas around and have encouraged him on. But yeah, I mean, in terms of like super exciting things, I wouldn't say that there's like a ton going on that I'm like, oh my gosh, this is incredible. Like, there are a few little anecdotes that maybe I'll share at a later point that happened that I'll probably get into, but not right now, not this episode. This is kind of a off the cuff, hey, I haven't podcasted in a year, why don't I put something out? So what's the future of this show, and what's the future of the Anus Apples show that I do that's about bad movies, and what's going on with all that? Okay, so first of all, both of those podcasts will be found at podcasts.expeditionbuster.com. So that's podcasts.expeditionbuster.com. I'm not removing them. I'm not deleting them. What I am saying is, I don't know how often I'll be jumping in, because there are legitimately times where I'm like, I want to watch bad movies, and talking about them is kind of fun. And there are legitimately times where I'm like, I want to talk about my life, even if it's just to me, so I can get stuff out there. And, those times happen. In fact, there have been plenty of times since last year where I've been like, I really want to do a show. And then my brain fought me on it. It's like, no, you don't. You don't really want to do a show. And I could feel that conflict inside me where it was like, no, I don't. Like, and sometimes I question my rationale behind getting in front of the microphone at all or streaming at all, where it's like, is there a good reason why I'm doing it? Or is it just to fill time? And the answer is, I don't know. I know that for my Friends and I's podcast, which is Aural Malpractice, that's A-U-R-A-L, Malpractice, it's because I love goofing off with my friends and doing some off-the-cuff stuff, doing some pre-planned stuff that the other people don't know about. It's a creative outlet, and it's also just me hanging out with my friends. So when we do that, it does bring me joy. But does me speaking into the void bring me joy? Does me getting in front of a microphone and saying every month I have to do these shows, or every so many weeks I need to do this, does that really make me happy? And even with game streaming at times, does me game streaming make me happy? And I'll say, usually when I'm interacting with other people and we're playing in a group, sure. But it's a lot harder for me to want to just do game streaming to play a solo game at this point. Versus when I got started, I was like, oh, maybe I can make some money this way. And then the reality has kind of set in over time. I'm not going to make money this way. So, what is my impetus for doing it? Well, I do like talking. I do sometimes like playing games. And I love dealing with audio and video stuff when I'm in the mood. I'm not always in the mood. So what does that mean for this show and for Anus Apples? Well, it means I will do them when I feel like it. And I know that the big rule of podcasting is consistency is key. Consistency is key. And I just can't. I can't be consistent with this because, like, it forces me into a box. And it forces me to do something that I legitimately enjoy doing, but then don't, because I'm forcing myself to do it just because I quote unquote need to. And that kind of sucks. Like, when there's something you enjoy doing, but you don't want to do it because you feel like you're forcing yourself to do it. And it's really hard to deal with that because, like, a successful podcaster, it's every week, it's every month, it's every something. And I can't make myself do that. I mean, I can, but it won't be real. It will be, me sitting down, making myself do an outline, making myself get in front of the microphone, making myself upload the thing, and that's not what I want it to be. And that's why I say, like, in some ways, the podcast would be better if I had other people to talk to where we could talk about these life issues going back and forth, where I could hear their stories about the struggles that they overcame. Because it's a lot, there's a different dynamic when you're talking with somebody and you're listening to them and you're asking questions than there is just sitting in front of a microphone saying, yeah, these are the good and bad things in my life. I hope that they resonate with you in some way. Yeah, I'm not an Adam Curry. I am not a Joe Rogan. I am not, a major, podcaster who, has that same level of drive and that same level of access and that same level of camaraderie with different people right now. That doesn't mean I can't build it over time. And I think for me, maybe one of the biggest draws to game streaming and podcasting, all that, is the idea of having someone else to interact with, for connecting with other people. Because, I mean, yeah, there's plenty of people that just record a video of themselves and put it on YouTube every day just because they want to. I'm not that person. I could sit here in front of the microphone and just record and go on for hours, because of the way my brain works, and I don't want to. Like, I don't. There are some times where I think, hey, it'd be fun to learn more about sound and about voice acting and about doing voiceover work and stuff like that. And that does have a little bit of an appeal to me. But, it's also a grind. It really is. I've listened to plenty of voice actors, and a lot of times it's either they were in the right place at the right time, or it was a grind. And I don't know that I'm in a point in my life where I want to go on a grind just to try to maybe find a secondary source of income, or just to maybe, get a name out there. Don't get me wrong, like, I love the idea of doing voices. I love the idea of doing voiceover. But getting there is a long road, especially because I know for a fact I can't hold on to voices very long. Like, I can do a voice like this, that geeky guy who is, perpetually stuffed up, the nerdy guy that is either a scientist or... that nerdy guy in town. Well, actually, if you were going to go nerdy in school, well, that nerdy kid in school would probably have more of a voice like this, where it's a little bit higher, because, the nerdy guy at school is still young, and because he's still young, he doesn't have the deeper, I went to school and I'm a scientist type of voice. So it's a little bit different. And it's a little bit harder to hold on to these things because, I mean, you got to hold on to the voice for the entire performance. And you've got to really get into character. So, like, let's say, for example, I have to sound sad. And I really have to reflect on the difficult things in life. And I don't. Like, that's acting. It's not just somebody making up a voice. It's the performance to go with it. And so I used to love acting. I used to love the interacting with people on stage and stuff. But it's very hard to persistently do it and to stay on point for it. Even if you're doing a voiceover.
Hey, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Expedition Buster podcast. Hi, my name is Chris, and it's great to have you here. Hey, make sure that you like, follow, and subscribe, and do all of those things, because it is so important. I can only do that so long. So yeah, and we just went on another tangent, because hey, that's the way it is. So, what's going to happen for this show? What's going to happen for Anus Apples? I'm hoping to do them occasionally. When my brain decides that it's something worth doing. That said, if there is something that comes into the picture to make it more intellectually stimulating for me than talking by myself, so if there are other people that are involved that are, I hate to say this, I'm not looking for like a young kid to be part of this. Like, I hate saying that. Like, I'm not looking for like any random person, but if there are people out there that want to talk about their life experiences, I would love to do that because, first of all, I like learning from other people. But second of all, I just like hearing other people's stories. I like being able to ask them, like, hey, you said that you experienced this. How did you get past that? Or what are the most exciting things in life to you right now? Like, those are the things that, like, really, like, when I'm going back and forth with somebody, that's something that I really enjoy doing. Or, like, if I'm doing a bad movie podcast, you know, having somebody else to bounce ideas off of, like, where you watch the movies at the same time, and then you come into the show, and you go, okay, let's go, and you just tackle it. And it's a stream of consciousness for an hour, versus me sitting there taking copious amounts of notes while I'm watching a movie, and then, you know, coming in and doing it all by myself, it's not as fun. So that would change the dynamic. But if the dynamic doesn't change, I'm going to put out these shows sporadically. It might be for a year. It might be a bunch all at once. Because, like, sometimes I get on a legitimate bad movie kick and I'm like, oh yeah, we're going to watch back-to-back bad movies for, like, days. Well, then I might be inspired to do back-to-back podcasts and I'll just schedule them out, like, a month apart or several weeks apart. But that's what it's going to be. It's going to be feast or famine because that's just where I am in life. It doesn't mean that I don't want to podcast. It doesn't mean that I don't want to get out there and talk. It just means that I don't always have a good reason to do it. And I don't always have a joy in doing it. That said, if you are looking for a podcast that is more consistent, although not entirely consistent, and something that I'm definitely going to be doing more of in the future, you do want to check out the Aural Malpractice podcast. That's auralmalpractice.com, A-U-R-A-L Malpractice. Or you can find it in all of your podcasting places. All the places have it. And just fair warning, it is a comedy podcast that is definitely not safe for work. And where basically my friends and I just say whatever the hell comes to mind that seems funny at the time, regardless of how inappropriate it might be. So, you've had your warning. Anyway, what else? Is there anything else, any other rabbit holes I want to go to? Not really. I will say that, you know, hey, it sounds a little awkward saying this given that I said, hey, I don't know how often I'll be doing this, but I do believe in value for value. And what that means is if you get value out of what I'm doing, whatever that value is, show value in return. And that could be sharing the podcast, that could be leaving feedback, or it could be sending some money my way. You could either do that through the PayPal link on the website, or you can do it through the Podcasting 2.0 value block, which is enabled through all sorts of podcasting apps at this point. Fountain is one of them. And there are many others that allow you to literally stream tiny chunks of Bitcoin to podcasters. So if you want to do that, you could do that as well. And regardless, if you do decide to financially support me or just to comment, to share, whatever, I appreciate all of it. I really do. And hey, if it's a comment on the website or through the Fediverse, you know, I'll try to respond back because, you know, hey, I like interacting with people, and when people have something to say, I generally want to make sure that they feel heard. So, at this point, I'm not going to do any outro music. I'm not going to do any of that for now. In fact, if I'm going to do this more frequently, I'll probably re-examine the music that I want to use. But in the meantime, I do want to thank you all for listening. Thank you for sharing your expeditions of life with me as I'm sharing mine with you. And just remember that it's always great to cross paths. Just don't cross the streams. We'll see you next time, whenever that might be. Take care, everybody. Bye.